The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. Live in the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Okay, Tov, Shavua Tov. Very good. Thank you, Howard. How are you guys doing today?
Yes, excellent. Thank you. Very, very interesting events over the weekend in Israel, where Israel publicly admitted responsibility for attacking targets in Syria on Friday night. I'm completely fascinated by this because it is so against the, it goes so against the normal modus operandi. Let's just start off with talking about the details of the event in case our listeners are not aware of it. What happened?
So we understand that on Friday night around 11 o'clock in the evening, there were sounds heard over the Damascus area and indeed over the skies of Lebanon. And what the Syrian news agency, the official Syrian news agency was reporting was that Syrian air defense units had fired on enemy targets above Damascus and had apparently destroyed several, according to the Syrian state news agency. What in fact happened, as has been acknowledged now publicly by Prime Minister Netanyahu, is that the Israeli Air Force in fact attacked bases of Iranian militia in the area of Damascus, once again an attack on that airport area. Apparently arms and ammunition were being moved that was seems to have been the target of this particular attack on Friday night. There was talk about an Iranian Hercules C-130 aircraft that was involved. I'm not sure if the plane itself was destroyed. There was also talk about a military hospital that came under attack. And would you believe that this military hospital is being used to store arms and ammunition? Who would ever think that such a thing would happen? But apparently that was the case from the reports that I've read. And of course, there was a lot of noise. A lot of people reported hearing explosions in that area of the airport. That's really just on the outskirts of eastern Damascus, so really very, very close to the Syrian capital. We understand that the skies of Lebanon were used for the Israeli aircraft to launch this attack, and that really was where the Lebanese people were reporting hearing noises overhead. So that seems to have been the situation. We understand that Israeli Air Force planes were circling quite low in the southern part of Lebanon. There were sonic booms that were heard around that area, and that's where the missiles were then fired from there towards this target at the airport. And the one thing that I just don't quite understand is that we've heard about so many different attacks, most of them at the airport, most of them involved the movement of arms and ammunition, many of them involving Iranian aircraft. So the question is, why do they just keep doing it like this, you know, thinking that the cover of night will protect them? Because there's just been so many attacks carried out against aircraft, against the movement of arms and ammunition. I'm just kind of a little flummoxed, a little bit perplexed about how the Iranians are thinking, how the Syrians are thinking. Why is it that they're not trying to do something slightly different? I don't know, maybe they are, that we're not aware of. But it just seems to be the same repeated story each and every time that we hear about, you know, these attacks that get carried out against Syrian / Iranian targets. So that really is what we understand about what happened on Friday evening. From an Israeli point of view, there seems to have been no issues at all in terms of all aircraft returning safely back to base. From the Syrian point of view, there were reports of damage, but not of injuries as such. So it seems as if though there was nobody actually injured in those attacks, and really it was all carried out against the cargo that was being unloaded from this plane or was being stored in this military hospital near to the airport.
Why do you think Israel went public on this? The cynical part of me says that this is very good for Netanyahu in terms of a upcoming election. But another reason could obviously be the fact that we know that there's going to be American movement out of Syria, etc. What do you think, or what is the what are the latest thoughts on why Israel would have changed its style in terms of this publicity, in terms of giving this publicity?
Well, the interesting thing for me is that outgoing IDF Chief of General Staff Gadi Eisenkot actually said that Israel should not take credit for these attacks on Syria. He actually said that yesterday evening, and that was only just hours after the prime minister announced that Israel, in fact, was responsible for bombing the Iranian arms in Damascus on Friday night. And what Gadi Eisenkot said is that I don't think that Israel needs to take responsible for strikes in Syria, as has been done in the past. We should only really update relevant parties. And then he went on to say that thousands of targets have been struck in Syria. Not tens, not hundreds, thousands of targets have been struck in Syria without claiming any responsibility or claiming any credit at all. And so he thinks that the way to go about things is really just to keep things below the radar, as has been traditionally the way that things have been done up until now. And he went on to say that dozens of attacks take place, that attacks take place every single week against targets in Syria. And, you know, that this is the view of the outgoing chief of general staff in terms of, you know, what Israel should be doing on the public relations front. And so therefore, you know, his words potentially support your view, Howard, that the prime minister is trying to use this for his own public relations and in order to try somehow to strengthen his position before the general election. There has been some comment in the press about changes in Iran, and these changes in Iran necessitating a change in Israel in terms of how we deal with the Iranian threat. Because, you know, clearly what's happening here is that the IDF is attacking Iranian targets. I mean, I know that a lot of the arms and ammunition that has been attacked have been earmarked for Hezbollah in the Lebanon area rather than Iran, but it's still coming from Iran. And so therefore these attacks really are attacks which are directed more at Iran than anything else. Mm. And the Iranian presence in Syria and potentially trying to prevent any substantial Iranian presence in Syria being established. And so, you know, there is an argument which says that with the changes that have been taking place in the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the debate, the criticism that has been going on in Iran, within Iran itself, between various factions, government factions, about how things should be dealt with and whether Iran should even be involved in things that are beyond its own borders. This is the reason why the Israeli government has decided now to take a slightly different path in discussing more publicly some of the successes that it's had in destroying the shipments of arms and ammunition in Syria that have come from Iran, in order somehow to try and break open further divisions within the Iranian public arena, within the Iranian government arena, to try somehow to drive a wedge between the differing factions who held different views about what Iran should and shouldn't be doing, particularly beyond its own borders. So, you know, that's the interesting view, both a disagreement within Iran about this and, in fact, a disagreement within Israel, where Gadi Eisenkot, the outgoing chief of general staff, is saying that he thinks that what the prime minister is doing is not what he would choose to do in terms of going public on these things.
Although that said, it's not like anybody thinks it was anybody else who carried out those attacks.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I think there is a difference between kind of thinking that you know and actually knowing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while it's clear that there would be very, very few, if any, other militaries around the world who would have the interest to attack these targets, we do know that the Americans, at least up until now, have been somewhat involved in some of the attacks that have happened. But clearly, the main interest group is Israel, and I think it would be foolish to think that it would be anybody else. I'm not quite sure who else, especially now that the Americans have decided that they're going to withdraw from Syria, who else would really have the interest and who would have the audacity to carry out these attacks against these Iranian targets. I think also, by the way, we also need to consider it, that the fact that this is really also an attack against Russia to some degree, that even though that S-300 anti-missile system hasn't yet been fully deployed, but this is really kind of a poking a finger in Russia's eye with regard to that S-300 system, not only about the fact that they've given it to the Syrians to somehow to try to protect Syrian airspace, but also to show how ineffective the S-300 system potentially could be against Israeli firepower. And so, you know, this is kind of also showing Russia up to some degree.
Absolutely. Senior government officials took leave of outgoing Chief of General Staff Gabi Ashkenazi. What will Ashkenazi's legacy as a military chief be?
So Gadi, not Ashkenazi, but Gadi Eisenkot.
Eisenkot,
is actually leaving.
I thought so. So
that's a mistake. So Gadi Eisenkot is leaving his position as Chief of General Staff this week. He will be succeeded by Aviv Kochavi, who will become the new IDF Chief of General Staff. And there was a party yesterday at the Kiria, the military headquarters in Tel Aviv, to take leave of Gadi Eisenkot, who has been in that position for 4 years. He's been an interesting character because he hasn't had any wars or any major operations during his time in office. And so the question is, does that make him irrelevant in the history of chiefs of general staff? Does that kind of assign him to those who really didn't do very much during the time in office? Or does it make him potentially someone who's a little bit different because somehow during his time he managed to conduct things in such a way that no formal official operation was launched which involved Israeli enemies, and that he really conducted things, let's say, below the radar. He managed to somehow maintain a below the radar kind of approach to things as he led Israel's military. And certainly there were a lot of accolades and a lot of compliments that were given to him. He's typically a guy who tries to avoid the media. He's not been in the public eye at all, or at least not very much to the extent that he's been able to avoid it. He's just wanted to get on and get to the business of doing things on the ground. And that's really been the style that he's been operating. But the question is, has he really been effective in confronting this conflict that we have with Iran? And it really comes in two parts. First of all, Iran's threat to Israel from Iran itself and what's going on with the nuclear weapons program and all of that sort of thing that's going on in Iran on the ground. And of course, the next issue is Iran's reach outside of Iran. And of course, we spoke about it in terms of the presence that Iran has in Syria. And I think that Gadi Eisenkot's legacy is yet to be determined. I think that we're going to have to sit back on this one and wait for time for history to judge how he's been as a chief of general staff. I think he had an interesting time. I think he did a good job. Being chief of general staff of the IDF is not a simple exercise. It comes with a huge amount of responsibility, a lot of pressure. I think Gadi Eisenkot has handled that very well. He's shown himself to be a very personable, a very kind of real on the ground kind of leader guy who's really been at the forefront of things. He was rappelling into tunnels, to the tunnels that were discovered in Gaza, and he was seen, you know, inspecting things on the front line. He was always out there doing things on the ground rather than sitting in the office in the ivory towers trying to determine policy. And I think that it's going to be interesting that Aviv Kochavi, I think, is going to be a different sort of guy, a different type of leader. And it's going to be interesting to see how he will do things. But I think that Israel owes a huge debt of gratitude to Gadi Eisenkot. I think he's done a good job. I think he's done an immensely admirable job under very, very difficult circumstances. And I think that whatever accolades are dished out to him are well deserved. History will judge his time in office ultimately.
Absolutely right. And that's where we'll leave it. It's about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll be back with you at 7:45 tomorrow morning. Have a fantastic day.